This is the Big E Sports Show
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
From the Sports Map Radio studios, here's Elissa Walker Campbell.
Okay, here we go. The divisional round of the NFL playoffs is set with two games each today and tomorrow. And the countdown is on for our first matchup with Houston and Baltimore. Looking forward to all the action in the divisional round preview. We've got you covered. Welcome in to Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. I'm your host, Elissa Walker Campbell. Always, we love to connect with our audience. We are live on social media at eRadio Sports. You can email the show info at eradiosports.com, podcastarena.com, and download our app for all the latest sporting news and developing stories. And we are powered by Progressive Insurance. Drivers who switch and save with Progressive, did you know they save nearly $750 on average? What a great way to open up our program. We always enjoy when we have an opportunity to talk to, from the Washington Post, their senior writer, and that is Jerry Brewer. Hello, Jerry.
Hey, Elissa.
Hey, it's a big weekend, and certainly the countdown is on for the Texans and the Ravens, 4:30 Eastern time. It is our home base right here in Houston. We just want you to weigh in on C.J. Stroud, and what would you like to see from him today?
I'd like to see him just be C.J. Stroud. That's been more than enough this year. I got to be honest with you. Before C.J., I had a pretty severe bias against Ohio State quarterbacks. I think it's just taken them a long time in the NFL, you know, particularly in the sort of Ryan Day, Urban Meyer era, when they've become more of a passing team as opposed to what Ohio State used to be. Like, even as their offense got more sophisticated, it seems like it's taken the quarterbacks forever to be productive passers, and some of them have been bust. He is the truth. I mean, I'm sitting around looking, man, what a great statement it is for him to be standing in an AFC in which Lamar Jackson, who's about to become a two-time MVP, Patrick Mahomes, and Josh Allen are the other quarterbacks standing. He is elite, and I think he is going to be elite for years to come.
Well, Jerry, he is elite, and I agree with you that he will be elite for years to come. But when you evaluate his game, what impresses you the most about this rookie quarterback?
He's unflappable. I think... and normally when you're dealing with a rookie quarterback, I think you're looking at things and saying, oh, he did really good, but they kept everything really simple for him. That's not the case with CJ. They do some pretty sophisticated, complicated concepts. Mm-hmm. The throws that he has to make are really difficult, and he's able to make those throws and still be incredibly efficient. Only 5 interceptions all year, and it's... He was stuck on 2 forever before he had a bad game that got him to 5. And so he's just a treat to watch. You look at him and he looks like he's 12 years old sometimes, but that mind and the way that he plays the game is incredibly mature. We should have seen this coming back in the college football playoffs. When he played so well against Georgia, and Ohio State should have beaten Georgia in that game. That was a sign of things to come. And the great thing about CJ is that offense, even though you see weapons, there's a lot of build-out that's left to come on that entire team. But on that offense specifically, there's 2 or 3 more high-level pieces that I think you could put on that team, and they'll have the cap flexibility to do that in the years to come. So just imagine what CJ is going to do with a full complement of weapons, and not just Tank Dell coming back, but with veteran weapons as well.
Hey, we are so glad you're with us on this Saturday afternoon. Countdown is on, the divisional round preview. We are breaking it all down with Jerry Brewer from the Washington Post. He is their national sports columnist. And when we talk about the Texans, I mean, they have certainly flexed their muscles in the postseason. I just have to wonder, I mean, what were your expectations for them coming into the season? I mean, could you have seen that they would be in this position and in the playoffs?
No, I thought 7-10 would have been a miraculous first season for D'Amico Ryans. And, you know, here we are talking about them winning a playoff game, you know, winning 10 games in the regular season. They just might be the next IT team in the NFL. We'll see.
Okay.
I mean, there's a lot of work you have to do to kind of maintain things. But I love the direction that they're headed in. And I just think that there's so much substance behind what they're doing. And it's we're going to focus on the quarterback, obviously, but it's so much more than the quarterback, what they're doing right and what they're getting right. So I look at a team that maybe opening up a window that could be a fairly long window in the NFL. I know things change really quickly in this league and equalize, but I now look at the Texans and say they're clearly to me the best young team in the NFL, and we'll see how far they can take it on this run.
Jerry, who deserves the most credit when you talk about Houston?
It's a three-headed situation there. It's the GM, it's the head coach, and it's the quarterback. You're getting players, you're getting the right players in, so you got to give the front office a tremendous amount of credit. They've had so much coaching instability, some of it their own fault, but they found a guy, and they found a guy who is a Texan through and through when you go back to his playing career. And he pushes all the right buttons. I think he's a great defensive mind. He's also a great leader of men. I love the fact that in hiring Bobby Slowik as his offensive coordinator, there's an ambition to the way that he wants to play offense. I think a lot of times we pigeonhole defensive coaches and don't want to give them head coaching jobs because we think that they're just going to play a bland style of football and manage the game. But that's not the way that D'Amico Ryans does. I mean, he really attacks the game. It feels like you're watching an AFC version of the San Francisco 49ers in a lot of ways, and the way that they go after people and the way that they play physical but athletic football. And I think he's a real keeper. I mean, I think we might look back in 8 years from now and talk about how that was the most significant hire of the past decade in the NFL. So the organization in full is functioning the way that you would hope it to. And you could look at it and you can say, yeah, they had a lot of top picks because they were bad for so long. But they had to have the guts to go out and trade a lot of that draft capital to make sure that they got Will Anderson and C.J. Stroud. And that kind of decision is something that may have set them up for a window of success for years to come.
National sports columnist with the Washington Post, Jerry Brewer with us at SportsMap Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. Countdown's on. Texans-Ravens, 4:30 Eastern time. And the Ravens, of course, they are favored to defeat the Texans. But I just have to wonder, how much pressure is Lamar feeling?
A significant amount of pressure. I mean, his playoff history hasn't been what he hoped it would be. The last time they were in this position as the number one seed, they lost to the Tennessee Titans, I believe. I mean, after ruining a 14-2 season. In a lot of ways, though, this team is better than that 14-2 Ravens team from a few years back when Lamar won his first MVP. I think that they can win in a number of different ways. That team was very much run-based, very much a team that needed to get ahead of you. I do think that this team can possibly come back in games. You don't want them to come from too far behind because they're still not the most electric passing team. But there's a lot more things that they can do, and I think they've shown a lot of learning from some of the hard lessons that they've had to learn in the postseason. And it just feels like it's their time to make a push. I'm a big believer in the hardships of postseason really making you tougher for later. And so there's enough scar tissue from disappointing losses in January that should be able to help this team during this run that they're making. I mean, no team in the NFL history has been so dominant in the regular season over teams with winning records. I believe they beat something like 8 opponents that had winning records by 14 or more points.
Mm-hmm.
It's just unheard of. I mean, to crush the San Francisco 49ers, the most talented team in the NFL, to crush everyone, really, who has stood in their way. This is their time. There is pressure. I am interested, just for the sake of curiosity, to see what would happen if the Texans are up 10-0 or 17-7 and the Ravens have to really prove who they are.
Texans-Ravens coming up 4:30 Eastern time. My final question for you is, Your hometown, your base is Seattle. So what was your takeaways from Seattle season? What went right and what went wrong?
It was a surprise decision that they let Pete Carroll go. But being here in Seattle, it wasn't as stunning as you would think. It just felt like maybe Pete was starting to lose some of the just the joy of really activating his team. It just didn't seem like his positive message was getting through enough. They had a disappointing year. It's stunning, however, that the owner seems to very much have said, "No, Pete, it's time to go. Let's end this amicably." I did not expect that for Jody Allen. And as a matter of fact, I'm a little worried about the Seahawks for letting go of a really good thing maybe 1 year too soon. But it all depends on who they hire. And it's very clear that they want to become a more disciplined team, but still keep that positive player first culture that they built. I think that's going to be incredibly difficult to do. But you're talking about the Seahawks over the past quarter century that's had Mike Holmgren and Pete Carroll as their coach.
Yeah.
You talk about two tough acts to follow.
Absolutely. Give him a follow on social media, X at Jerry Brewer. Check out his stuff. Washington Post does an amazing job. He is their national sports columnist. Safe travels, and we look forward to another conversation here in 2024. Thank you, Jerry.
All right, take care.
You bet. Stick around. Much more coming your way. The fastest 2 hours in radio. Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. We will be right back.
Listening to the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Elissa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, Elissa Walker-Campbell, welcome back. Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show, many different ways to connect with you. We are always live on social media at E Radio Sports. You can email the show, info at eradiosports.com, podcastarena.com. Each and every one of our guests are uploaded on that site, and you can check them out. And always download our app for the latest sporting news and all the developing stories. It's an exciting weekend. Our divisional round preview continues. And right now we're going to focus our attention actually on the Cowboys and their season and why they are bringing Mike McCarthy back. We're delighted to welcome to the program for the very first time on this big weekend from The Athletic. He is the Cowboys beat reporter, does an amazing job, and that is Saad Youssef. Hello, Saad. Good to have you on the program.
Thanks for having me.
Well, our Cowboys, they have only won 4 playoff games in the past 25 years, and perhaps they're coming off their worst playoff loss in franchise history. So just kind of help us, give us an explanation on why the Cowboys believe that Mike McCarthy is the right guy to take them to the promised land.
Yeah, that's a great question. And obviously, you know, his status was in limbo all week. I would agree with you. I really do think that, you know, when you look at the context of the entire situation, this probably was the Cowboys' worst postseason loss in franchise history. But when it comes to McCarthy and the faith that Jerry Jones has and the Cowboys overall have in him to be the coach, I think a lot of it really does stem with Dak Prescott. As we know, one of the most important positions, if not the most important position, not just in football, but I would argue in team sports, is the starting quarterback. And if you have one, there's a lot that goes into, you know, the decisions around him that kind of dictate a lot of things. And I think when you look at Mike McCarthy, the way that he instilled his offense, of course, he's been the head coach in Dallas for 4 years now, but this was his first year taking over in Dallas as the play caller and de facto offensive coordinator. And Dak Prescott led the league in touchdown passes, the first Cowboys quarterback to ever do that. He spoke highly of McCarthy at every step of the way, and even towards the very end, you know, when he when we brought it up to him actually after the loss to the Packers and we said, you know, McCarthy's job status could be in question, he volunteered his own job status and said, well, then mine should be as well. So he's really tied himself to McCarthy. And I think when you do that, and Dak Prescott has a cap hit of $60 million this next year until he gets an extension, and they're likely going to do that. And so I think when Dak Prescott is here, when you're starting quarterback, a starting franchise quarterback gives that kind of vote of confidence to the head coach, I think that goes a long way for the organization's decision.
Saad, were you able to find out why Jerry Jones didn't want to make a change? I mean, the fan base, Cowboy fans were very vocal on social media after the announcement.
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with also, like, I think Jerry is looking at what gives him the best chance to win in 2024, and very few times do new head coaches come into a new program and win the Super Bowl in their first year. In fact, it's only happened 4 times in NFL history, and, you know, in 3 of those times, that new coach had a Hall of Fame quarterback in Peyton Manning, Johnny Unitas, and Joe Montana at the helm. And so the point is, it's not often that, you know, a new head coach comes in and they have immediate success. And I think Jerry is looking at 2024 and looking at the Green Bay loss. I think there's one of 2 ways to look at it. I think you can look at the Green Bay loss as just an atrocious laid egg by the Cowboys, mm-hmm. or you can look at it as just another chapter in the 30-year chapter of playoff drought. And I think Jerry is taking the optimistic view and choosing to look at it as, you know what, they did great all year. 3 straight 12-win seasons under Mike McCarthy. I think he looks at the Packers' loss as more of an anomaly than a pattern.
Saad Youssef is with us, Cowboys beat reporter for The Athletic. We want to pause and have you connect with our national audience. Where can they go to find you online, social media, and, of course, all of your articles that you are posting at The Athletic?
Yeah, I'm on X, formerly known as Twitter, at Saad Youssef 126. So that's my first and last name, SAADYOUSUF 126. And, of course, you can subscribe to The Athletic and pumping out articles pretty regularly over there as well. So that's where you can follow along.
Mm-hmm. So as we talk about the Cowboys, I mean, what does Jerry Jones need to do in order to make the Cowboys successful?
Well, I think there's a lot of question marks going into this. I know everyone's been focused on Mike McCarthy, and rightfully so. Of course, he's the head coach. But right now they have their defensive coordinator having 5 interview jobs around the league and Dan Quinn. And, you know, if Dan Quinn does leave, I don't know that they have an answer right now on who exactly is going to be calling the defense, which has been a top-level defense in the regular season for the last 3 years. So I think that's going to be the top question for Jerry Jones and Mike McCarthy, I should say. I think another thing is going to be some really big contract decisions, contract extensions coming up. I mentioned Dak Prescott. He's entering the final year of his contract, carrying a $60 million cap hit. That's untenable. You can't really construct a roster like that, so you have to extend him. What does that look like in guaranteed money, in years? All of those things come into play. Micah Parsons is now eligible for a contract extension. He has 2 years left on his rookie deal, if you include the fifth-year option. And maybe the most pressing deal of them all, aside from obviously Prescott, is CeeDee Lamb, who is going into his contract year. And I would be shocked if he reports to training camp or anything like that if he doesn't have a contract extension. That's not something that he said, but, you know, just the way that he played, the season that he had, I think he's going to be want to secure a long-term deal as well.
What was your reaction or just takeaways from watching Dak in that game against the Packers? There was a lot of talk, a lot of chatter as far as that he looked tight. What do you think was going through his mind?
He did look tight. And to be honest, as someone, you know, I've covered Dak Prescott since the day he got into the NFL. I really felt that this year was going to be different for him at that moment. He was at home. The Cowboys had won 16 consecutive games at home coming into that game. Dak Prescott has been phenomenal. The Cowboys were putting up 40 points a game at home this season. It's really one of the craziest things to me that, you know, the Cowboys, they really do play like front runners. And when the Packers got the ball first and drove down the field and scored 7 points and put the Cowboys back 7-0 halfway through the first quarter, 1 drive in, I feel like Dak immediately started pressing as if he needed to overcome that deficit all in one play or all at one time. You know, you go back to his first drive and that pass on 3rd down to CeeDee Lamb, you know, it was a few inches off, and that's just not something that you've seen from Dak regularly this year so far. So I think he started pressing. And then that's when right when that got a little bit more extreme, I think that's when you saw all the downpour of the turnovers, the interception deep in his own territory, and then, of course, pretty much the dagger in the game, which was the pick 6. So I think you're right. He just started pressing, and I think the Cowboys have been phenomenal this year, mm-hmm. when they played from ahead. But any time they got down, they really did struggle.
What were your expectations going into that game when we talk about the Cowboys and the Packers? I mean, did you seriously think the Packers could pull off a win?
I thought that I definitely picked the Cowboys, and I picked the Cowboys by multiple scores.
Right.
If I did, you know, there was also this question of if the Packers do win, what would happen? And my answer to that, actually something that I did write on The Athletic, is that the Cowboys are going to be they're going to play against the Packers and the Cowboys, and that's exactly what ended up happening. The Cowboys were playing against the Packers, but then they were playing against themselves as well, because they were shooting themselves in the foot with untimely penalties, turnovers, all of those things that they've kind of avoided when they've had success this year. I did not see the Packers winning. I think anybody, if they say they saw the Packers winning in that fashion, I don't really believe that. I'm not saying the Packers couldn't have won that game, because I definitely saw an avenue to that. But nobody saw a 27-0 deficit for the Cowboys in the first half.
It is a big weekend, the divisional round. It is underway. Looking forward to all of the games. Of course, tonight, the Packers are on the road to face the 49ers. What are some of the keys in that matchup that you'll be looking for?
I think the 49ers have to just get to Jordan Love. I mean, to tie it back to the Cowboys conversation, what was fascinating to me was the Cowboys were number one in the NFL this season in pass rush percentage, in pressure percentage against the opposing quarterback at 47%. They only pressured Jordan Love four times the entire game. And, you know, when you allow any quarterback, and let alone a quarterback who is talented, even if he is inexperienced, if you allow him that kind of time to sit back and pick you apart, he absolutely will. So I think the 49ers definitely have all the tools. I believe Armstead has come back from the injury. They have Fred Warner. They have a lot of talent. Of course, Bosa, they have talent up front in the back end. As long as they get to Jordan Love, I don't think that the Packers will have a lot of success against them.
Well, and that was one of the things I was going to talk to you about, as far as, can Jordan Love, can he handle the 49ers defense? We'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, I think it's going to be tough. But you know, especially in that road environment, that's another thing that, you know, you kind of tie it back to. And for him to be as young, I think that it can go one of two ways. I think he can get, you know, like you said, not handle the pressure, things like that. But another thing that happens with these young, inexperienced quarterbacks is they have nothing to lose. They don't know any better. And so you just go in with no pressure, and you just kind of go in and do your thing. And I could see it going that way. The problem for mm-hmm. Jordan Love, though, is that he's kind of all alone on that, or he's not alone, I'm sorry, in that inexperience. All his receivers are first and second year players, so that concerns me a little bit, but, you know, you just never know with these things.
Hey, we're looking forward to the big matchup. Packers on the road to face the 49ers, 8 o'clock kickoff. It is our divisional round preview and coverage, and, of course, we've been taking a look back on how the Cowboys season played out. Cowboys beat reporter for The Athletic. Check him out online. That is Saad Youssef, and a true pleasure to have you on the program. We look forward to another conversation here in 2024. You take care.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
You bet. Stick around. Much more coming your way. Sports Map Radio Network.
You're listening to the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio studios, here's Elissa Walker-Campbell.
Elissa Walker-Campbell, welcome back. Saturday afternoon, Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show, many different ways to connect. Always live on social media, at E Radio Sports. You can go back and listen to each and every one of our guests at podcastarena.com, and we are powered by Progressive Insurance. And perhaps you're looking for a career path with flexibility, great pay, and benefits. Go to progressive.com/careers and apply online today. Well, the divisional round weekend, it is underway, and we've got you covered for all the big matchups. But right now, we're going to shift gears. We're actually going to take a look back at the College Football Playoff National Championship game and Michigan's big win. So always thrilled to have back with us from VSIN Live, that is Tim Murray, and it's his first time on the program in 2024. Happy belated New Year. How are you?
I'm great. How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great. It's super exciting weekend, and we've got a lot of storylines to unpack. But first and foremost, I wanted to get your thoughts on Michigan winning the Natty. I mean, what stands out to you?
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of a perfect storm, I think, in a lot of sets. This is a team that was building for 2023 with all the pieces coming back, Blake Corum coming back, a lot of pieces up front. And, you know, for them to be such a strong defensive team and then rely on their offensive line to win this national championship. And then I also think, you know, they got a bit fortunate in that it seemed like Alabama was down for their standards this year. You look at Georgia as well, you know, getting knocked out. So, you know, this, you know, for Michigan to pull the national championship, I think it was great for them, and you know, and now we'll see what happens in the future with their coaching situation.
Hey, it is divisional round preview, but right now we're focusing in on some college football. VSiN Live, he is back. Check him out, primetime 6 to 9 p.m., VSiN College Football Betting Podcast as well. That's Tim Murray. Give him a follow on social media at X, at 1, Tim Murray. And, you know, when we think about Michigan's just as their run, their incredible championship season, the thing about them that really stands out in my mind is they were not afraid to go eye-to-eye, toe-to-toe against anybody, even when their head coach was out due to the scandal. They just continued to find a way to win.
Yeah, I mean, you think back to the back end of the season, you know, with Sherrone Moore taking over, you know, his post-game interview is one I think many of us will remember, with a couple expletives in there, yeah. The emotions. but, no, they were able to beat Penn State and Michigan, like you mentioned, without their head coach. And, you know, we'll see, you know, as we go into the land of a 12-team playoff. Like I said, I do think, you know, sometimes you need a little bit of luck on your side. You know, we will never know if Georgia would have beaten Michigan. But, you know, the people that I talked to out here in Vegas had Michigan power rated right on the same level as Georgia. So it wasn't like it was, you know, they skated and missed out on an elite team. I do think, you know, Georgia coming up in the next year, I think will be, you know, no doubt the favorite to win the national championship. But, yeah, it's kind of wild when you think back to the year for Michigan, starting the season with Harbaugh's suspension and then the another suspension coming down. So, I mean, he missed half of the regular season games there, right, on the sidelines. But, yeah, I mean, it's a testament to them. It's a testament to their team. I know they used it as a rallying cry, motivation, all of that. And, you know, when you're elite athletes like, you know, anybody playing in the college football playoff, just anything that gives you that extra motivation, you'll use it. So we certainly saw them use that motivation quite a bit throughout the year, even though certainly I think it led to a lot of collective eye rolls. Whatever worked for you guys in the locker room, and ultimately it did for the Wolverines.
Jim Harbaugh, obviously the hottest name in football. How do you see this playing out? I mean, and what's his legacy as a college coach? I mean, 40-3, three Big Ten titles and three playoff appearances, and he won a natty.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I mean, what Jim Harbaugh has done, whether you like him or not, you got to respect, just he's an elite coach. He was,
right.
You know, he went to San Diego in the FCS ranks, left there, went to Stanford, and people, I think, because of the success that Stanford had and the sustained success once Harbaugh left with David Shaw up until the end of that run, people forget just how terrible that football program was. And we're starting to see it a little bit, honestly, right now with the season that they just had under Troy Taylor. So, I mean, look, Jim Harbaugh is a winner wherever he goes. And I know, you know, Michigan fans were a little uneasy early on because they could never seem to get over that hump against Ohio State. And then the COVID season was a complete disaster. But, you know, sometimes patience pays off. And, you know, they waited and they believed in Jim Harbaugh. And, you know, last 3 years, they've beaten the team, you know, beaten Ohio State, won the Big Ten,
right,
you know, got blown out 3 years ago in the playoff. Then they get upset by TCU. And then this year it came all together. So, look, at this point, I would be pretty surprised if Jim Harbaugh comes back to Michigan as their head coach. You know, we've been waiting for news to come out. And we'll see when that news ultimately comes out. I know he's interviewed for the Chargers and Falcons job. So, you know, Jim Harbaugh, one at the NFL, one at the you know, highest level of college football, and you know, whatever you want to say about Jim Harbaugh, at the end of the day, he's a phenomenal coach and just a flat out winner.
Hey, we are so glad you're with us on this Saturday afternoon, going one on one. Tim Murray, VSiN Live, talking some college football. It was a big week when we reflect on what all took place. A lot of movement, and of course, Alabama. Nick Saban, one of college football's all time greats, won 7 national championships, and he's checking it in. He's retired. What was your reaction, and were you surprised?
You thought the day would never come. I know he's 71 years old, but it's just one of those things where you never think you're eventually going to see it. You hear the whisper, but you know, it's one of those I'll believe it when I see it type of deals. And you know, for him, he calls it a career. And you know, what's interesting is the timing, right? So you know, he ultimately departs after the national championship game. They go out, get Kalen DeBoer. You know, who knows who they offered the job to? You know, Dan Lanning, Mike Norvell, Steve Sarkisian were all kind of discussed as a possibility there, but they ultimately land with Kalen DeBoer, who I think is a good hire, probably, in my opinion, a better hire than Jed Fish going to Washington. He's a winner. He's won everywhere he's gone at the lowest levels, in the NAIA, where he won national championships, to turn around Washington in the fashion that he did. But you know, we will see with Kalen DeBoer, with you know the max exodus to the portal. Alabama's not really in an advantageous spot currently to attack the portal, so you could certainly see a Alabama influx coming, I would say, in the spring portal when that comes around. Therefore, for the Crimson Tide, you know, but for Nick Saban, I think it's pretty easy. I mean, he's the greatest coach of all time in college, and you can maybe argue he's the greatest coach of all time in any level. I know he had his stint with the Miami Dolphins that didn't play out well, but, you know, to go from Michigan State down to LSU to win a national championship there, and then to do what he did in this era where you've got the NIL, you've got just, you know, so much more competition to reinvent himself from, you know, kind of an old school defense reliant team to, you know, late in his career with Steve Sarkisian calling the plays where they were airing it out with elite wide receivers, and to have Devontae Smith win the Heisman Trophy, to go out and start to get elite quarterbacks like Jalen Hurts, Bryce Young, Mac Jones, you know, reinventing himself flat out, just, you know, the numbers are just staggering, you know, to be ranked number one in the nation every single season except his first and last, to make the College Football Playoff as regularly as they did, to win six national championships. It's unprecedented. Certainly, I think in our lifetimes, we'll never see anything matched to the level of dominance that we saw from Alabama, especially in this day and age. I mean, back in the day, you know, the Notre Dame in the 40s, Nebraska in the 80s and 90s, Miami, et cetera, you could stash guys. You can't do that anymore. Guys are going to leave. They're going to go in the portal. And they were just able to figure out ways year after year. And, heck, this team, sure, if you told Nick Saban, wasn't one of his best teams, and they still found a way to make it to the playoffs, beat Georgia, and be in overtime, you know, in a couple plays away from maybe even winning another national title.
Right. Hey, I only have time for one more question. How do you think Nick Saban came to the decision to retire?
You know, he's done, I think, a couple sit-downs. Reese Davis, I know, had an extensive one with Nick Saban. And from the sounds of it, it just sounded like it's a 24/7, 365 job. And, from the sounds of, you know, Nick Saban, you know, he's a guy that is going to do it and go to the levels. And, you know, I think he kind of mentioned that, you know, going to bed at 2, waking up at 6, when you're in their 70s, it's just not as easy to kind of bounce back. So I think ultimately at 71 years old, and, you know, his wife, Miss Terry, who he mentions all the time, I think they were looking forward to, you know, maybe enjoying life a little bit. I was going to believe it when I heard it and saw it, and, you know, ultimately it comes out. But, you know, it's funny, you kind of take a step back, and, you know, he was starting to do weekly appearances with Pat McAfee this year, and, you know, you think, you know, maybe if Lee Corso decides to hang it up after a phenomenal run on college game
Does
Nick Saban step in there? Does he just sit back and enjoy himself? He doesn't seem like the type of guy that just wants to sit back and do nothing. So I don't think Nick Saban's going to be a guy that we don't hear from. I'm sure we'll find ways to hear from him. So I think ultimately, I think, you know, the grind of coaching college football, and the grind with the portal, with NIL, with everything you have to deal with, and then, oh, by the way, continuing to scheme up game plans to win football games. I think ultimately, you know, at 71 years old, he said, you know, let's call it a career and, you know, walk off with a pretty proud performance where you lost in overtime in the Rose Bowl against the eventual national champion.
Hey, Tim Murray has been with us. VSiN Live primetime, 6 to 9 p.m. VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. And give him a follow on social media at @1TimMurray. Enjoy all the big games this weekend, and we'll catch up again real soon. Thank you.
Of course. Anytime.
You bet. Stick around. Much more coming your way. Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. We will be right back after this quick break.
You're listening to the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Elissa Walker-Campbell.
You bet. We're back. Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. Our divisional round preview and coverage continues. We are so thrilled now to have with us in studio Luke Mario, Check him out, host of Mario on the Mic, national radio host at our network, and give him a follow on X at Mario on the Mic. He's on 10 to 1 a.m., the Midnight Rambler. Good to have you on the program on this very big weekend.
Yeah, great weekend with a full weekend of games. Probably the best football weekend we have of the year when you consider both Saturday and Sunday. So always great to be here.
There are so many intriguing matchups, and let's lead off with the Texans. They're on the road to face the Ravens. How surprised would you be if DeMeco Ryan's team manages to pull off this major upset?
Yeah, it'd be a real surprise to have a rookie quarterback and a first-time head coach. Not only the fact that they've gotten this far, but then if they were to go beat the number one seed in Baltimore in the Ravens as a 9.5-point underdog would be huge for the Texans. To get to the AFC Championship game in year one of this new regime and this new era of Texans football would be huge. I don't know if they'll win, but I do give them a chance. Lamar Jackson has not been great in the playoffs. C.J. Stroud, for my money, has been the best quarterback in the league this year when you consider what he's working with and the fact that he is a rookie. So, you know, my biggest concern is Stroud going outdoors, but I give the Texans a chip chair and a chance this afternoon to try to make something happen.
How surprising has it been just how well C.J. Stroud has played this year? I mean, obviously he has exceeded expectations.
He sure has. If I had a vote, he would be my MVP this year. I think he's been so tremendous. I mean, the Texans the last 3 years had 11 wins total in those 3 years. They have 11 wins this year, so that's how big of a difference Stroud has made. And to his credit, you know, he doesn't have a true number one wide receiver. He's not throwing to a Jamar Chase or a Justin Jefferson. He's turned the guys around him into talented wide receivers, but they were not drafted high in the draft. They didn't have high expectations. They didn't have big years before this season. So Stroud's really doing a lot of it really on his own or by himself or by making his teammates better around him. So it's really been quite the season for Stroud. As I said earlier, you know, the biggest issue or concern for him today is just going outdoors in the cold. It's supposed to be in the 20s. Wind is supposed to be about 16 miles an hour in Baltimore. And Stroud this year, when playing outdoors, went only 2-3, and his quarterback rating was 30 points lower than when he was indoors. So that's the biggest concern for me more than anything. But he has been so good this year, I wouldn't be surprised if he had another great game and somehow pulled off another big surprise.
Well, and Lamar Jackson, I mean, he's playing in his backyard, and of course he's accustomed to these kinds of temperatures. But do you feel like, Luke, that he is facing the most pressure? There's very high expectations on him, but does he need to win the Super Bowl to kind of get change the narrative?
Yeah, it certainly will help. I think he has to at least get to the Super Bowl. He certainly has to win today and probably, yeah, get to the Super Bowl to really help himself out. Him and Josh Allen are probably the two quarterbacks with the most pressure. I mean, Lamar's just 1-3 in his playoff career, and in those four games, the Ravens average only 13 points per game, and Lamar has twice as many turnovers as touchdowns in those games. So he's been really poor in the playoffs, and I expect him to actually win the MVP this year, so he'll have more MVP awards than playoff wins so far. So, you know, he's checked one of the boxes on that resume of the MVP awards, but you have to check the other box of winning playoff games. And you look at great quarterbacks from the past. It's what has held Dan Marino back all these years when you talk about best. John Elway, until he finally got those two Super Bowls at the end of his career. That was the big knock, of course. So, you know, you can have great personal success like Lamar has, but we don't put you in the top tier of quarterbacks until you actually win the biggest games. And Lamar hasn't done that yet, but this is a great opportunity. Number one seed, they had the bye. They're at home, obviously, in throughout the AFC playoffs. They're healthy outside of the tight end. So this is a great chance for Lamar to try to make something happen here in the playoffs.
Okay, Texans, Ravens, 4:30 kickoff Eastern time. Let's look ahead to tonight. And the Packers are on the road to face the 49ers, 8 o'clock kickoff. How about the Packers? I mean, how stunning was that win over the Cowboys? I mean, they blew them out in convincing fashion. They rolled Dallas.
They sure did. That was the biggest surprise of the weekend for me. I thought maybe the Packers would win. I did not think the Cowboys would cover the 7 points, but I never imagined the Packers jumping out to a 27-0 lead in Dallas. It was something. And it's a real credit to the Packers because you have a first-time starting quarterback who was in his first playoff game, and you have the youngest playoff roster we've had since the 70s. So for them to be able to go into Dallas and win like that was truly remarkable. Now they have to go on the road to San Francisco, who had a week off. They're healthy. Extra time to prepare for the Niners. Maybe it's my bias as a Vikings fan, but I think the Packers are in for a bit of a rude awakening tonight. I think this is going to be a much different and tougher test than what they just faced last week as they go to San Francisco tonight. The Niners are favored by 9.5 for a reason. I think San Francisco could win by double digits, and the great story of the Packers might come to an end tonight.
Okay, so you got to give the Packers a chance. I mean, how can Jordan Love and the Packers upset the 49ers?
It's a good question. Their defense has not been great this year. Last week, you know, notwithstanding, the defense did play well in Dallas for a large portion of that game, but the defense has not been great. So that's the biggest concern for me, is trying to slow down the offense. Now, if you talk to like the analytical crowd, they'll tell you, in order to beat a good offense, you have to outshoot them. You have to try to win a shootout as opposed to the old thought process of playing keep away and keeping that team off the field. So my point being, in order for the Packers to win, it's going to take another great performance from the offense like we saw last week and Jordan Love and that team. And I like what they did last week where they took the football first, went down the field, scored, set the tone, and then also, obviously, you're able to play with a lead, and teams are a lot different that way. And the Niners are not built to come from behind. So for Green Bay tonight, I guess try to do the same thing. Try to win the coin toss, get the football first, see if you can score on your first possession, and try to get a quick lead on the Niners and try to play from ahead. Obviously, that's what everybody wants to do. But if the Packers can do that, maybe they stand a chance tonight.
So, Luke, weigh in on just the play, the production of Jordan Love. He has certainly exceeded so many expectations, and just how he has conducted himself. He's been so efficient. I mean, are they truly hot enough? I mean, what I hear you saying, that they can't pull off the upset, but, I mean, anything is possible. This is postseason play.
Yeah, it's true. And you always want to bet on the quarterback in these types of games. Like, you know, bet on the better quarterback. And Brock Purdy had a really good year, and I do like Brock Purdy. But Jordan Love's in a stretch here where he has 21 touchdowns and just one interception his last handful of games, really the second half of the season. The Packers went 7-2 their last nine games. So you have to give him an opportunity with the way Jordan Love's playing. I just think it's a tough matchup going up against this rested and prepared Niners defense on the road tonight in a big spot. But absolutely, with the way he's been playing, sure, I'm sure Packer fans are very optimistic and hopeful, because if he keeps playing like he has these last few weeks, Green Bay has a chance to really hang in there with just about any offense. That's how good. His second half of the season, he was top two in QBR, so he's been one of the best performing quarterbacks for the last 2 months. So if he continues to play like that, you always have a shot.
Exciting matchups today, but let's look ahead to the matchups tomorrow. Buccaneers-Lions, 3 o'clock kickoff. What intrigues you the most about this particular?
You know, I've jumped on the Baker Mayfield bandwagon, I guess, this year. I think it's a good story to see
Boomer.
Him bounce back. That's right. Absolutely. He's played well, and he played well the other night against the Eagles. He's been good in the playoffs in his career. I mean, only 3 playoff games, but he's put up good numbers. He's 2-1. The one loss was in Kansas City to Mahomes a few years back, and they lost by only 5 when he was with the Browns. So he's been a good playoff performer. We saw in college he was good in big games. He's good with a chip on his shoulder. They're going to be underdogs tomorrow in Detroit. And when you look at that matchup in particular, the Lions secondary is not good. Stafford put up some big numbers. Thought the Lions were somewhat fortunate to be able to get out of there with a victory last week. So I think the Buccaneers will keep it closer than the Vegas line has been set. And I think Baker can have another big day. He plays well in these spots. He's never too afraid of the moment. He likes being the underdog. And with his wide receivers, they'll have an opportunity to try to expose that secondary for Detroit. So I don't know if the Buccaneers win the game, but I think Baker can have another good game, which I've enjoyed watching. And I think the Buccaneers can make the Lions certainly sweat it out in Detroit tomorrow.
Okay, so we're hitting on the Buccaneers and the Lions. I want to just pause for a moment. I don't want to digress too much, but give me a quick hit on the Eagles and just how their season played out. I mean, they lost 6 of their last 7 games, including the playoffs.
Yeah, and it's not just the fact that they lost, but it's how they lost. I mean, they just looked like a team that quit, especially Monday night against Tampa. It seemed like they didn't want to be there. The amount of missed tackles in that game, and a lot of times I think that comes down to, in a lot of cases, just effort. Especially when you watch that game, it looked like there just was not a lot of effort from the Eagles defensively. So I don't know what happened. I mean, they were 10-1 to start the year. A lot of those wins were close games. People thought they were getting a little lucky or fortunate. And then there was a sharp regression to the mean second half of the year. But again, it wasn't just that they lost. It was just they looked disinterested. It looked like Nick Sirianni lost the locker room. And they were getting blown out in games that they shouldn't have. I mean, they got blown out by Tyrod Taylor. They got blown out by Baker Mayfield. If you are one of the better teams in the league, you shouldn't be losing by 20 points in these games to these types of quarterbacks. So it was just a horrendous finish to the year. I can't remember a team falling apart like that. And I would be shocked that, you know, they don't make big changes this offseason, because it seems like that was a team that just lost the locker room, and that's hard to get back.
Should the Eagles move on from Nick Sirianni?
I would. You know, I always say you can lose games, you can't lose the locker room. That's hard. It's hard to try to get that trust back, just like in any relationship. When you lose someone's trust, it's hard to try to – you have to work really hard to
it's
get that back.
It's the cornerstone to any relationship,
exactly.
Right? It is.
Yeah, so I would say the same for a coach and the team. And it just it feels like being on the outside looking in, watching that team, that something like that occurred there. And I think it's really challenging for a coach to try to get that locker room or that trust back from his guys. You might be better off just starting fresh, moving forward.
Okay, we are winding down. You got to give me a hit on the Chiefs-Bills tomorrow night. That obviously is a compelling matchup.
Yeah, big game of the weekend. A lot of people compare to Peyton Manning, Tom Brady. Peyton lost his first 2 playoff matchups to Brady, but those were in New England. Third time around, Peyton won at home against Brady and then won the Super Bowl. Josh Allen lost his first 2 playoff matchups to Mahomes. Those were on the road. Now he gets them at home. So this is a chance to try to get the monkey off the back for Josh Allen, get past Mahomes, and see if they can win a Super Bowl. But it's hard to doubt Patrick Mahomes, even as an underdog, even when he doesn't have his best weapons. He'll be on the road in the playoffs for the first time in his career. But I do think I like the Chiefs to just try to find a way to win, because it still is Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes.
He is host of Mario on the Mic. That is Luke Mario, our very special guest here in Hour 1. Stick around. Much more coming your way. The fastest 2 hours in radio. The Big E Sports Show. We will be right back after this quick break.